everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Dice Before Dishonor, where cavaliers rein in their mounts, we try to rein in our laughs, and one fly samurai will most likely at range, because he's way at the back of the party with a bow on a giant bloody horse, probably would be the last man standing. We shall see. But tonight, these little buggers have split the party underground to cover more ground, as it were, for Omer Acasti. Yes, if you've had a little bit of a whiff of Echoes of Honor, our Honors of Echo spinoff podcast, you will see that Monsieur Tapo, our Castellan Cavalier Archer, has joined a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, a ninja, a Ulfin, Skald, which is the equivalent of Viking, of the Vinmark family, but we'll get into a little bit more depth with them a little bit later and in extra episodes. But our cavalier's work isn't done. The party finds themselves still in the underbelly of the Belisica, of the last man, of the dead god Aradin, in the capital city of Opara. Gentlemen, with one ratfolk unconscious, several minions dead, and one ratfolk still tied up being claiming to be very cooperative, what would you do?
Search bodies. 10 wounds.
Okay. Now, are you guys willing to nurse some more of these people back to consciousness? Or are you just doing the best you can with band-aids?
We'll nurse one more back to consciousness, unbeknownst to the other one, and we'll do the whole see if their stories mesh up.
Okay.
Before we get into that kind of stuff, might it be beneficial to make sure that there's no one else lurking around? There's still a few unopened rooms.
Absolutely. It's a good idea.
Okay. Bringing you guys back. Taking you to the big towel.
So we'll nurse the Chicky Boo one back to health. But
yes, Thessal, the rat folk dude that you captured, called her Beaker.
Baby Beaker.
Okay. So you guys want to do the once around? Now, you still got Tapo and Acasti here can sort of like guard the unconscious. You guys can leave Thessal chained up if you guys just want to sort of do, you know, because Leon had gone off on his own and got halfway around this place and started hearing you guys through other doorways. So you're starting to get a sense of the size of this place, if you follow me.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, if that's what everybody wants to do, is we'll kind of keep the female kind of where she is as long as she's in no immediate threat of dying. I think the male's kind of locked up. He can't really get away. So we could definitely just kind of give this place a once over real quick just to see, you know, kind of what's going on, make sure we haven't missed anything.
All right. Allow me to do the walking silent tour really quickly with some global illumination. Boom. Can you guys see the whole map now? Dead center, the stairway and this key-shaped room with the hallway where you guys first entered going out to the right or to the west. A long pit-filled room filling the entire east section. To the north, you have a large sort of L and key-shaped strange room that Winston fell into with most of the floor and everything collapsed. A few pillars holding up the floor, but the door pretty much unreachable on the far side. Another set of double doors through another slide room, but again, lots of climbing and much the same as we went through with Winston trying to make Olympic jumps on your side. Okay. To the south, we had the many columned room where Thessal came out of the trap door, where he's still waiting. And then the exit out of the bottom west turned into like a 15-foot wide hallway that Leo swept through with his bow, found another relief carving of Aradon, the big eye, on a wall with a whole bunch of floor mats that remained untouched, and came up sort of joining the room that Winston fell into. Okay. Doubling back, there is literally a hallway going straight into the mat room that Leon just popped out of now. And there's one more door that we have not explored with a very, very short hallway, 15 feet long, 5 feet wide, another door, and it literally pops out the bottom of the room where all the pits are in. So on this level, the once around, a lot of rooms double back and connect each other, and they all connect to the center room we're standing in. But besides going down that stairwell, that ladder that Thessal is chained up to, you guys have pretty much secured the area. There doesn't seem to be anyone or anything down here besides the combatants, rat folk, minions, and dire rats that you've already encountered. What do you want to do?
I suppose now comes the quote-unquote fun part, right?
Winston's going to have a snack.
Sorry, you guys have a log sheet going? You guys got our log. I've got something here called our log that anyone want to be able to do the...
Who's going to be the treasure keeper?
Well, I can cheat a little bit and give you the old cut and paste of the gear, because you guys found like a decent haul on each sort of rat folk leader.
Okay. Yeah, that might be the easiest way.
If you guys want to, take the time to count the money, take an inventory of all the weapons, you know, that kind of thing, while a couple of your number are sort of poking around, looking under rocks to see if they've stashed the stuff in.
Otherwise, we could have our voice in the sky in charge of the sheet.
Ooh, that's not a terrible idea.
That is a terrible idea.
Oh, come on. You were giving me trouble that it didn't involve you last time.
Can you just directly cut and paste that from one program to another, though? Is it?
I can cut and paste from the PDF version I have of the module into.
Yeah, so then just do that. And that way it's super easy.
Sure, sure. And like I said, there's the audience version, or what you guys have. You can take, shall we say...
You should change it from our log to our horde. And that's where we will begin.
Horde? Your horde, eh? All right. So you guys have a bunch of... Oh, I can't cut and paste because you guys haven't identified this stuff. You guys have all these vials of unidentified liquids. Right. Liquid? Guess what that movie's from. I'll give you a hint. I'm an android.
But
he loves water. Liquid summons his servants to bring him water. I exist the way the system exists. No?
Matrix? I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
Ice Pirates.
Oh, God. That movie's old AF.
Yeah? And it's awesome.
I actually watched that not too long ago. Well, like, I guess not. I shouldn't say not too long ago. Like a year or a year and a half ago.
What other movies can expose you to space herpes? I mean, come on.
Space herpes?
Anyway.
Thing.
I digress. I will tell you what you do have, like, that you can identify. He literally did change the, you know, our horde, ladies and gentlemen. That's really funny. Now, everything on here is times two. So two suits of leather armor, rat style, two light crossbows with 10 bolts, minus all the ones we shot at you guys. So instead of 20 bolts, I'd say there's like, you know, maybe 16 left. Two masterwork daggers, two sets of masterwork thieves tools, and a total of 242 instead of 121 each gold pieces.
Making the bank, but no bust.
But no bust as of yet.
Did we ask the other rat dude about its location yet?
He said he would cooperate, and he was curious if his love interest had survived.
Right. Well, we should probably try to make her survive.
You did last episode. And with your heal checks of like 10 and 13, you could tell she was alive, possibly stable, but could not sort of stabilize or bring her around yourself.
Right. Anybody else available to help?
Now, for the sake of argument, I do believe if a character can be conscious with any jolt of healing potion or actual magic, you know, you can wake them.
And I keep forgetting that whenever I aid somebody, I give +4, not +2.
I will allow you guys to attempt one last group heal check to revive her to consciousness. It's not going to do much for her hit points, but it will possibly bring, you know, wake up.
So who has the highest heal?
Where is it?
I got +1.
I got +1.
I'm at 0. So you guys are winning so far.
I'll help with aid another. I think this seems to be like the more, you seem to be much more religious than
take,
I am.
Can you take 10 on a heal check?
I think you can.
Because if everybody takes 10, then the eight another succeeds. So two people can do it, giving a total of 6.
Oh, you guys did that last time. Last episode, you come out with a big 11. So you guys got to hit 50.
Right. So two people aiding with me as one of the aids gives +6. Okay. And then the person, so if we all take 10, that should be 16.
Yeah, it should bump up enough.
So if I take a 10, I get an 11 plus the 6 from eight other is 17.
Okay, when you aid another, you're giving a +2 to the guy.
Right, but I give +4 because of my helpful trait.
Okay, so that's 6, and then 8 from a second guy aiding. Okay, I follow you now. So that's 18. Okay. 7.
And I definitely say take 10 because it'd be Frank rolling. And I'm sorry, Frank, but you and I have the same luck with roll 20, which is...
The roll 20 curse?
Exactly.
Terrible. It's terrible. It's so comically bad.
Okay. All right, gentlemen, I might regret doing this, but I just can't help myself. I'm such a fanboy. Her eyes flutter open, and she darts her head around quickly and then sees her captors, who they are, you know, the focusing eyes and the remembering crossing her vision, and she sort of just relaxes and mumbles.
Oh, what do you want, my bika?
Look to the others. So now they're both up-ish.
Well, Matt wanted to keep them separate. So Winston's, like I said, you guys
still one's chained down the hole. She's up there.
Right.
So let's get her story and we'll see how they
match. Sounds good. Okay.
And I'll let the Lord speak because I am no Lord.
Very well. Let's see here. What is my, wrong sheet. I'm trying to see what I can get with through diplomacy, taking a 10.
Oh, I think your past diplomacy is pretty much probably intimidate by now, I would guess.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Okay. Let's see.
Well, I guess you do. They are helpless, so you have a minute. I mean, you do have that option to try diplomacy, you know. But you remember what happened last time? Like, these are obviously hostile.
See if there's, it's been a while since I've looked through this, so let's see. Family ties, ambassador. So
I think you'll need to make a couple checks to move them up the, like, their attitude scale so that they're friendly with you if you want to get information that way.
Yeah, and you can only bump them twice. If I'm hostile, it's 25 plus her charisma modifier to bring me to unfriendly. And, you know, where he, you got him into, like, you kind of cowed him by cooperating with intimidate. Diplomacy is nicer, but, and intimidate is more effective, but it's only temporary. See, that's the downside of intimidate is you only get 1d6 minutes, and then they usually, you know, seek revenge, hate your guts, slink away, whatever, right? Where diplomacy is kind of like, oh yeah, I'm gonna like this guy for a while,
you know. Mm-hmm.
It's way harder to pull the rolls.
I think intimidate is the way to go, and yeah, have others aid.
Yeah, I think that's fine. So I can take a 10 with intimidate. That would give me a 17 plus any aid bonuses.
Winston rolls up and just kind of gets Barkley to give a snarl.
Aid
another.
And Leon goes around to the other side, kind of like holding the bow, just in a physical presence to kind of remind the rat folk about, like,
we shot you in an
how
arts.
Well that went last time with an aid another. Right. For
okay, dare I say Leon is looming. We have someone that looms in a different podcast and does quite well. All right. Give me your aid of 10 there, Leon. So you get an additional plus 2. And Barkley, let's have an aid another roll. See if you can push this 17 all the way to like 21.
Sure.
They may not have an amazing skill set, ladies and gentlemen, but they are working together cooperatively, almost as a team. Can't wait to see them start busting out team feats.
Oh.
What'd you get?
I got a 9.
I got a 5. That said, wasn't...
Dude, we suck at this.
You were saying you accepted Gilder Varth's take 10.
Yeah, I never said she wasn't intimidated with him raw. Just Winston added to the pile, and then you added to the pile, so I'm just going with the 8.
Oh, I meant, like, if he's taking...
You can take a 10 on 8 other.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I figured we'd be doing.
Yeah, that's what I thought so.
It's more fun to make you roll. Okay, fine. Anyway, she curls up in a ball and just starts shaking her head.
No.
Almost weeping, not from being upset, but from the obvious pain she's in. I did fall down a hole, get shot, stabbed. Now I'm getting growled at. Coming to, she's in the negatives, obviously.
Well, you'd best come up with a good story. We've got another one down, and he's telling one side. We want to hear yours.
You spared us, old chopper?
Some, to get your stories. So start talking. What are you doing down here? And where did the relics go from upstairs?
We took them.
Where are they?
She thinks about asking, you know, for... You can see the wheels turning, like, you know, oh, I want to spare my life, blah, blah, blah. You know, you guys are all leaning in with the intimidate. So she just takes a shaking hand and points it back through the double doors that Bartholomew opened. Taking a cue, Bartholomew nods and goes stomping off, you know, into the room with all the pits for another search. She says, in the holes under the mats. Relaying this information, sure enough, Bartholomew, with his rope, makes the climb. You can hear him grunting, lowers himself down into the corner of one of these, comes back out, you know, just methodically starts checking them. And under a mat, kind of in a corner, obscured, you know, from sight, where you could, like, just look in the hole and go, it's kind of empty, or even go down there and kick around, you know, they've found, like, a natural sort of divot in the floor. And then just made a mat, light up like a piece of rag in the mats over it. It looks flat. So it just looks like a, you know, piece of cloth in a corner, but it conceals like a small hole. And lo and behold, a few trinkets, including the bust of a handsome looking woman in her late 30s.
Da 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 da.
Zelda music to level up. Bartholomew comes back displaying it all proudly. Big tusky grin.
All right. Well, that's what we came for, right?
No trouble with the houses. Please don't punish Pika and the rest. Don't want
trouble. And she just kind of shakingly points a hand. Again, another rat folk sort of folding instantly at seeing your crest. And she passes out.
Well, that was easy.
Intimidate, succeed. Tells you what you want to know.
Victory.
Quick search. Find the stuff. Victory. Yes. Romeo striding forward. Well done, gentlemen. Oh, this is certainly. He takes the bust from Bartholomew and starts turning it over. This excellent, excellent work. Turning to the closest cavalier and clapping on the shoulder. Just happens to be Tapo. Come, bring these ruffians. We'll let the church deal with them. We have what we need, gentlemen. And he, you know, still babbling on, telling Tapo and whoever's following what great job you guys did. Bartholomew follows with the stuff. Tapo, Bartholomew, and Acasti start heading up the stairs. What the rest of you do?
Perfect, perfect. Just in time for lunch. Spur Barkley on and start heading up the stairs.
Okay. It's lunchtime. I didn't. You guys are unionized cavaliers? Union break?
Well, yeah, every two.
I've debated on making Winston eat like a hobbit. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but Google it.
Oh, yeah. Breakfast, second breakfast. Yeah.
11 Z's.
Midday lunch.
Yeah. 11 Z's. Yeah, 11 Z's, right.
Turning to Gildervarth as we start heading up. You all mentioning that there was another one left alive. Where is he?
He's down below at the bottom of the stairs. I've got him chained up.
Is he able to get away? He would probably possibly starve down there.
No, I was going to go take care of him real quick.
Oh.
Yeah. Speaking of the guy we left alone, making escape artist checks like mad. Come on! Come on! Yeah, no. Even with a natural 20, I don't think I have the skill enough to boost a 30 manacle. He's, you know, going to gnaw my own wrist off. All right.
All right. So I'll head down the stairs, key in hand.
Okay.
Dagger in the other. You be good. We've got...
Smiling, nodding at
we've
you.
We've got your maid up top.
Oh, his eyes get really wide.
And I'll...
Did she survive?
She did, but only because of your cooperation. If that continues...
Wonderful.
Yes, you may live still.
This is Thessal cooperating, my lord. Yes, this is wonderful news.
Unclick his manacles and get him back.
He seems sufficiently cowed. So, gentlemen, unless there is any other business you wish to search or conduct down here, we shall move the scene upstairs once again with Father... Do you remember his name?
No.
He wasn't...
Thanos.
He didn't have a very distinguishing presence.
Oh, not even the cameo of the half-elf? Now, there was a character to remember. He was in therapy.
No, we specifically blocked that one.
For a very good reason.
For a very good reason. Fine.
Valicus of the Basilica?
Father Valicus is already talking to Romero Acasti and, you know, shrugging and kind of pointing. And, you know, Casti's shaking the bust at him like, you know, you're so lucky, buddy. That kind of thing. Going on about their possible consequences. And they're all kind of shrugging and, you know, making out. And the scene is just sort of playing out on its own.
Wait, two very different things are happening at once in the scene, apparently.
Yeah, who's making out?
You know, Romeo, the scene is, all right. He might be so happy to get his bust back that he, you know, he embraces, you know, Father Vilkas and does the godfather kiss on each side. And, you know, no.
The threatening godfather kiss.
Yes. Any other business with the church before Casti? He's already heading for the door. Bartholomew is carrying the stuff. Tapo is... watching Acasti six and is pretty much glued to him. Bo still out, treating even the clergy upstairs like we're still downstairs in danger.
So did the rat folk accompany us up the stairs or did they stay down?
Well, it sounds like you've got Thessal on a leash. And unless you guys bring the bodies, they're right where you left them.
Well, I'm not...
Now, Acasti suggested let the, you know, the dangers pass, let Father and the lackeys look after, you know, what's falling apart down there. He's got what he wants.
So did we have one more potion of healing? Or what we thought was healing?
Possibly.
Didn't we use it on the girl?
No.
There were two sets of gear. He force-fed a sweet-smelling potion that belonged to Thessal to him while he was unconscious. Mm-hmm. And then he eagerly drank it, and yay, it was healing.
Yeah, I thought we'd done the same thing to the other female one as well. But
I'll let you guys get away with your take 10 on heal checks to like just sort of bring her around, but now she's still negatives and passed out. On the floor where we left her. So unless anyone wants to bring her up here where she
I think
two dead red
I think she's safer down there.
Okay.
And then if nobody objects, give the male the last potion of healing and have him take care of his sweetheart, you know, with some final passing instructions.
Sure, what are they?
Well, stay down here. If you poke your head up top again, there's going to be trouble. We came down once and cleared it out. We'll do it again.
We don't live down here, my lord. We were just using the bowels of the mausoleum to hide and exit.
Then exit, and I'll pass him the potion.
Okay. He looks at the potion, looks at you, nods once, and just scampers back down the stairs unless somebody stops him. He knows his good fortune. Off he goes.
You are saying you were a Stavian, correct?
Yes. Distant relation. Why? What of it?
Surprising behavior for a noble. Anyways.
Well, true, the Stavian family can be a bit stern, but I come from farther north. The Blackwaters. Less courtly. It's probably why my father sent me down this way, to learn court manner.
Well, lose the racism and we might get along. And Leon moves on.
Okay. So, portly. No lunch here at the church. Gentlemen are moving towards the door. Anything Winston wishes to do before he departs?
No. He's eager to get out so he can get back to wherever the food's at.
All right. Taking your leave of Father Villicus out front. There is no carriage that awaits Alcasti that he and Tapo arrived in. You guys get outside out front to see that Romeo is personally thanking each one of you, right? Slipping you guys, you know, a bit of gold for your, you know, for your trouble, and asks if you guys are, you know, available to possibly travel on his behalf.
Well, I don't see anything immediately pressing here. What travel do you need? What is it, another errand?
He says, well, gentlemen, he says, go to town, take the night off, rest, see your loved ones. I will send word as I did before via post in the morning or at the latest a day later.
Right then.
Thank you. You know, going along the line of you guys coming out and you, and he remembers, he says your names back to you, and you, you know, and even mentions whatever he witnessed from that standing point in the room. Magnificent job taking down these guys in the hallway, and you know, charging without fear, Sir Winston. You know, Wolf is quite the champion. You know, this little glad handing and a little bit of, you know, you guys get a little bit of the money promised, you know. It's not a lot, like, compared to the 242 gold that you just pulled off of Thessal and them. Like, you know, he's just giving you guys a couple of gold pieces each for expenses and lunch in a room, or, you know, you guys can go back to your family. But he obviously has something in mind, but he's, you know, wants to give you guys a rest, the weekend, you know, whatever, let some time go by. Now, when you guys first heard of him, remember, he sent you guys letters, and you guys were in the middle of reading them, and then he actually, like, found out where you guys were hanging out and came busting in. I don't sound like that. And talked to you guys personally, gave Tapo a ride, lovely description of all our mounts, and you guys rode out here to the church. So from this point on, you guys are free to replenish supplies, go sell your stuff that you guys just got from
the rats.
Divvy
up the gold.
Divvy up the money, go your separate ways, you know, reunite possibly at his word. What would you guys want to do?
Well, definitely divvy up the splits, and then...
Does anybody want to take the stuff and sell it? And when we reconvene, we'll, you know, like, one person takes the gear that we're going to sell, or if nobody wants any of it?
Yeah, I can do that.
Does anybody have any ranks at appraise?
Does anybody want to actually gain a weapon? A light crossbow can be used by anyone, and they do have masterwork bolts among regular bolts in their number.
It's not a terrible idea to keep some of the gear. You're just not going to get much of a split that way. I mean, really, the only thing that you're going to make any money off of is the masterwork daggers.
And the thieves' tools.
The thieves' tools you can sell for
half. So instead of the 100, they're worth 50 each.
Not bad.
The masterwork weapons, 300, are going to be worth like 150 each.
Yeah, so those kinds of things are better kind of kept in the party.
Okay. I'm not adverse to hanging on to him.
Okay. Now, the thing is that the party is about to dwindle. Now, in this take, you know, showing up and you guys being men of honor, I'm going to split this five ways. Tapo, not Romeo, but, you know, Tapo gets his cut or whatever, which would give you guys 48 gold pieces each. Okay. Which is pretty much a full purse. If a purse holds 50, right, you guys can basically say, wow, plus the coins he gave you. You guys have full purses. The feel of job well done. You've helped a church. You've helped a want-to-be nobleman take the first steps into reclaiming his noble title. you know, it's a good day. I mean, we were even pretty merciful, I noticed, with your opponents. Humanoid, not citizens, but, you know, not exactly monsters. You know, those monsters died. You kind of showed them the error of their ways, as it were, cut them loose. You know, all around. I'd say nods all around. You guys are, you know, starting your mark. You know, Villicus obviously will speak highly of you guys, or depending on how the intimidation...
He's building our rep. Here,
kind of thing. Yeah.
Getting our street cred.
Well, Romeo, anyway, because you notice how he glads hand everybody on the way in, on the way out, talks to Villicus. You know what I mean? If someone, a witness, were to speak of you guys as a party, Romeo really kind of set the tone. I'm here. These guys are going to do this for me. You better watch it next time. I'm not impressed with you. I got my stuff. I'm out, you know, type of thing. You know, each personal impression that you guys leave on NPCs can help you or hinder you in the future. But then there's also that sort of averaging it all together as a party. As you guys hang out, if three of you are assholes and one of you guys are nice, that great, nice gesture from one of you may be kind of lost in the shuffle of some general, nobleman, senator, or clergy member going, yeah, but, you know, these guys are assholes. They came in, they threatened me. You know what I'm saying? So going it alone is one thing, but got to remember, like, as a party, as you guys form up a name or whatever, there is that sort of general consensus of your actions, okay? And a lot of this will carry over in a war for the crown and be noted. So, I believe it's time to mount up. Bartholomew gets on his horse, has his take, keeps a crossbow, and I'm pretty sure he's interested in some masterwork bolts, and, you know, gives you guys the nod and rides back for town. Meet up with you guys later.
Regulators! Mount up!
Yeah.
So, as everybody leaves, I'll kind of stay there and kind of brush my hand across Vicky the horse and wait for them all to kind of pull away, and then I'll make my way back into the basilica, and okay. I'll find, gosh, what's his name? Father Villicus.
Okay. Let me pause you there. So Samish is going back into the church. Romeo and Tapple are watching you guys ride off. Everybody else is leaving, yes?
Yeah, I'm headed to get some food.
Okay. Okay, so Bartholomew, Winston, and Leon ride back into town. Samish pats down the horse and heads back in the church. Romeo and Tapo head around the back of the church and look over the cliff towards the ocean. You guys may see this as you guys ride away, glancing back. Both had arrived in a rental carriage. Now, take a moment to enjoy the luster of the garden, the hilltop, the grassy knoll the church sits on. Romeo waits until the horsemen round the bend. Farewell, my friends! Big smiles. Tapo, as he lowers his arms, the ginger beard frowns. The curls, as he doffs his cap, are drenched in sweat. And he pulls his hair back, almost slicking it, and the curls go straight. Flapping his hat, some of the sweat that was in it, wringing it, plops it back on his head. Gods, I hate this thing. Walk with me, Tapo. There's something I wish to discuss with you.
As my lord commands.
You notice a distinct shift in his accent. More Varisian now than Taladian.
I barely notice it.
You barely notice the shift in his accent. Now the GM's mentioned it twice.
Well, not that. It's that my character has poor wisdom. He wouldn't really care.
No, it's fine. I'm just messing with the audience and you. You're good.
Yes. Yeah, he's kind of dim.
He waves you over to the side of the church, and we walk around the corner overlooking the inner sea. The sea breeze rushing up the cliff's face, and then the last 100 feet across the grass and blowing across our faces. And he looks out over the inner sea.
You know, I have not once lied to you or those honorable men. My name is Romero Casti. However, I was not, shall we say, I did not spend my entire childhood and life here in Tal'Dor. My family sent me away to work. I spent quite a lot of time in Varisia. Upon returning, and only recently have got my assets together to, shall we say, reclaim my family name. This is the truth. Those men, he sort of looks back over his shoulder, pointing at the dust cloud that's leaving, which is the Cavalier Party and one samurai. They are good men, and I trust them to a point. But, turning to face you directly and smiling at you, 'twas you who appreciated my anger towards Father Villicus. It was you who backed me without question and without doubt. And it was you who performed most magnificently underneath the mausoleum, sort of making a decision, playing on his face and nodding. Will you walk back into town with me? I believe I have more business to discuss with you, my friend. And trust me, he says, place a hand on your shoulder. The coin has just begun to flow between us.
Coin, I'm in.
And so begins our spin-off series featuring Tapo and our auxiliary crew, Connor Besh, with Aiden Willems here playing a character, and Frank doubling up as a secondary character in Echoes of Honor. If you have not already heard it, please check out episode 1, because it has a split storyline which will cross over to this main storyline again and again, but is separate in itself so that there is no metagaming on Frank Hamilton's part, because he is actually featured in both podcasts. And it's kind of a one-shot. It's going to play out some events, but I do think it'll make the bigger story richer. So with those two having the conversation that begins Echoes of Honor, with you guys riding into town, the scene floats back into the church, where we find Lord Samish Gildervarth addressing Father Vilkas alone. Samish.
So as I hunt the father down, you know, I'll kind of take a look at the basilica, and it from the impression that I got, it had looked like it was a little rundown-ish. Is that correct?
Well, it's a church to a dead god, and there's enough sort of donations of families that remember Arda and the good day or whatever, the structure stands and it's maintained, but there's certainly no bling inside. You know what I mean? Like, they're not replacing tapestries, curtains and things that get worn aren't cleaned so often. You know, the pews are oiled and this and that type of thing, but you know what I'm saying? Like, the attendance is less and less, and there's just wear and tear on the floor, the stonework, you know, but the structure itself is a magnificent structure with flying buttresses and the whole bit, and it stands. And like I said, in general, the structure is maintained, but inside it's, you know, there's water damage and cracks, and, you know, every year that goes by, threadbare carpets, and, you know, they do what they can here and there, but there certainly isn't any kind of refurbishing going on here, not that kind of money.
Okay. So when I see him, I'll kind of make it obvious that I'm looking around, kind of appraising everything.
Okay.
We are taught that all faiths, especially Arudin's, was an ally. And I'll kind of hand over the little sack of coins that I got, the 48 gold. Hopefully this allows you to offer aid and sanctuary to any that come. I needed no reward to find the bust.
His eyes get really wide, and he looks down, and he kind of two fingers nestles in this drawstring and opens it up and sees that's actually gold coin. And he says, "What? Bless you, my son. Thank you." And he immediately does the good old testicles, spectacles, wallet and watch. Or is it spectacles, testicles, wallet and watch? He shows you his spectacles. He touches himself. He has no wallet and watch. We're kind of broke. But now he can buy, you know, next time you see him, he's going to be blinged out. "No, thank you, my son. May Ayrton bless you on the path you choose to take. Would you stay for service?" He says, kind of pointing at the pews, you know, to hear my sermon.
Thank you. Yes, I would appreciate that.
Smiling and nodding.
He'll kind of look around for a prayer book. He's unfamiliar with the hymns to Arwedain.
Okay. Waving over an acolyte, you know, he gives him the nod. The scene begins to pull back on the two gentlemen, and light and polite conversation continues as he settles his new benefactor guest, thank you for the tithe, in the front row, and takes his stand on the podium. And a booming, renewed vigor in the man, even though he has an audience of one plus staff. "Friends, family, noblemen, citizens, and those all who fall under the eye of Arwedain." And the scene sweeps back out through the doors, and you see two small figures, most likely Romeo Casti and Tapo, still deep in conversation, making their way back around the perimeter of the church. Camera pulls back even more, the dust cloud of that bent road of our riders heading into town. Up, 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 up into the clouds. Blackout. A title reads, "Years ago," sweeping towards the north, towards the frozen lands, towards the Ulfin lands, a whiteout, a tundra blizzard. Shadowy figures appear, a caravan, soldiers, a wagon. Heavy, heavy trimmed fur hoods, wrapped boots, maybe a bow or weapon sticking out, huge gloved mitts, the fur from animal hides draped over top.
A sickness appears.
The god of pestilence spews forth his ichor.
Shoot, what is that? Trollmaxian?
A man coughing, not spitting up blood, but just cannot take the cold, collapses. The caravan halts. A figure, a runner, runs back along the line, pointing at the man. They pick him up and they take him to the back of this small ensemble caravan and drape him over a horse. A knocking on the side of this wagon, which is more just sort of covered with tarps than any sort of, I should say, wooden, you know, covering.
My lady, another has fallen.
But if we stop moving, the men and horses that remain will surely freeze to death.
A slender hand emerges, pulled out from a fur mitt, reaches towards the man, and makes a sweeping gesture with delicate fingers forward.
Hi!
And he turns and starts yelling in the foreign Zagtong towards the men and the horses, trying to reinvigorate them. The scene stays on the hand, and after the man turns his attention away, it, trembling, recedes back into the wagon. The scene follows the hand now, comes down on the head of a small boy, merely 8 years old tops. He is asleep, nestled in his mother's arms. She is holding him close to her furred parka, trying to loan any amount of extra heat to the boy. His eyes are closed, and although obviously born in Tenzia and unaccustomed to this biting cold, the boy has a pallid complexion. Whether he's sick or of mixed blood is uncertain. She begins stroking the boy's hair and singing softly to him in her foreign tongue. Then the song is broken by horses whinnying, refusing to move further, men shouting warnings, commands back and forth. The man comes running again back to the window. Rap, rap, rap.
My lady, my lady, the Alfen have come for us. I don't know how they found us in this storm, but it's obvious that someone must have...
And a single arrow finds its mark, and the man falls over. How someone made that shot in a blinding snowstorm. Perhaps the man exposed himself by standing next to a large wagon. Falls dead. Raiders come, surround the caravan, take everyone hostage. The camera pulls out, and you see just a dark ring of parked figures standing twice as tall as the Zentai men, and you see their numbers just converge on the caravan. You see the Daizen men fan out in a circle, meeting them fearlessly, but meeting their deaths. Then, sometime later, the storm has abated, and the Alfen victors come to survey their prize. A young Alfen boy, again, 7, 10 years old tops, is being led astride, looking up to a wizened figure that he must respect. The boy is looking down into the man's huge footprints and hopping along behind them, trying to keep up, playing a little game, as it were, and mumbling to himself, almost in a rhythmic song. The man stops, and the boy pulls up short just before he hits the back of the man's parka, calling out in their brackish, heavy Alfen tongue, calls for the prisoners to be brought forward.
Now, nephew, observe.
The boy just nods once. This commander of men comes forward and meets one of the Zaiden soldiers. They exchange words, a handshake. The large Alfen man gives him a pouch. He looks inside, nods, and just leaves. The Alfens give him a horse, and he rides away further into the foreign lands, away from Zaiden. The man, scowling at this exchange the entire time, turns back with half a smile to his nephew and waves him forward.
Remember, nephew, every man has a price. It might take a lifetime for the bargain, but every man has a price.
The boy just nods once.
Now,
calling out in the foreign tongue, the raiders whip back the tent, pulling the woman, screaming, her hair falling loose, pulling off her parka, revealing the fine silken clothing beneath, calling for her son. The boy is carried limp unceremoniously out into the snow and dropped beside her. She falls over him and weeps. The large alpha man strides up to the woman.
Caravans come through our lands. They must pay the toll. Our price. If you cannot pay this, we take for ourselves.
And he motions guys in, and they start dragging her off the boy. She doesn't seem concerned for herself, just that she doesn't want to be parted with her unconscious, possibly sick son. So as they pull her away, young Alfin boy steps forward and tugs on his uncle's parka. The man nods once, giving permission. He strides up, long legs, towards the boy and stands over him. He leans over, picks the boy up. The boy is two-thirds his size, and when he stands him on his feet and shakes him, he suddenly freezes. The boy calmly opens his eyes, has taken a small knife from the orphan child's belt, and is now holding it inside the young boy's grasp up to his neck, where only the two of them can see, and just tilts his head. A stalemate. The boy with the blade is about to lose what last and little he has. The boy that is supposed to be taking a lesson from his uncle has let his guard down and is now with what could be his last breath. The large Ulfin boy lets go, doesn't take a step back, but slowly takes a breath in as if to show the young little Zaitan warrior that he's going to speak to him. Something. The camera leaves the two of them, back sweeping out. Time speeds up, advances. Many, many years go by, and we are back through time towards Tal'Dorei.